we should have negotiated or should have addressed this issue in such fora, that this is where the international community is better represented. Well, I can certainly tell you from the side of the Commission that this was obviously our first option. We tried for several years to raise the issues of enforcement in the WTO, in WIPO. We couldn't get any debate. On occasions, there was this a practice that we were not really used in this forum, that the point was refused from the agenda. Something that we had never seen. We had never seen, and we had never refused the point being put in the agenda of the TRIPS Council. It happened when we tried to talk about enforcement in the TRIPS Council. And by talking about enforcement, I mean, for instance, making a presentation on the EU system or on the EU best practices, not talking about proposing to revise the TRIPS agreement. Year after year, council after council, meeting after meeting, this issue was rejected. Clearly, by some countries, there was only the only kind of piracy they were interested in was biopiracy. Therefore, what happened is that at a certain moment, a number of countries concerned decided to get together and to put together their experience of the last 10, 15 years since TRIPS was put in place, and to see if it was possible to come up with an agreement building upon, reflecting that, and building upon TRIPS and the international standards. So that is a very important point that ACTA achieved. It showed that it's possible to gather interested parties and that they can still agree on a set of common rules. ACTA also, another important point is that ACTA has a broad coverage of intellectual property rights. Contrary to the original concept, that only copyright and trademark infringements would be covered. This broad coverage is, in our view, a European Union success. The European Union has a wide and diversified basis of right holders. We think that a farmer that produces products protected by geographical indications or a textile company that creates designs are also victims of counterfeiting and also need to be covered by better enforcement rules. We tried very hard to have a broader scope, and we achieved it. But, as usual, it's not possible to please everybody. And we were still criticized for not doing enough in terms of enforcement of geographical indication. What we can tell to these people, it's their legitimate interests, and they certainly have a point to express, is that we went as far as it was possible. We were very firm. Several other partners at the table did not share the same concern for this intellectual property right. They have different and opposed views about it. It was a very considerable effort, and we are convinced that the end result is much considerably better than the current the status quo, and that producers of geographical indications will benefit in certain ways for improving those standards. Another positive point about the EU is the sector of digital environment. The chapter has no international equivalent, and what we achieved in ACTA is to address in a balanced manner the most recent and fastest growing means of infringing IPRs. We are well aware, we fully endorse the view that the internet is a key instrument in the current days, and that it is very important to ensure that it remains flexible, free, and accessible to everybody. However, at the same time, it cannot be denied that it is used for massive infringements of intellectual property rights, not only in the area of copyright, but also in the area of trademarks, designs, etc. So it was very important that we get together and for the first time agree on a few common rules that give an initial frame that will constitute a first reference in terms of enforcement in the internet. Also the chapter on criminal enforcement. This chapter not only sets new international standards, but for the first time it resulted from a unanimous position of EU member states. A couple of words on this chapter. As some of you may know, this chapter was not negotiated by the European Commission. It was negotiated by the rotating presidency on behalf of the 27 member states. There is not yet an EU acquis on penal enforcement rules for IPR infringements. This means that the position defended by the EU in ACTA had to have the agreement, the express agreement of all 27 member states. It was each time discussed in the Council and agreed by all. Precisely because there it's not a matter of impact on EU legislation, but a matter of impact on national laws. So, another criticism that is often made, they say, Commission lies, the penal chapter will require enforcement legislation at the EU level. That is not true. The Commission is convinced that it is important to exist harmonized penal enforcement legislation at EU level. It's not a secret. We have made already a proposal for a directive a few years ago, but ACTA does not require that this legislation is put into place. ACTA needs to be compatible with the national legislations of our 27 member states, with the 27 national legislations, and this has been ensured and monitored very carefully by the member states. Nevertheless, we are, as a Commission, are very happy with this chapter. We think it's a very good chapter, and it will certainly help in the enforcement of intellectual property. A final point in the area of customs enforcement, where it was important to confirm also that controls for export are very important, are essential. The vast majority of IPR infringing goods circulate across borders. It is produced massively in a few countries. It is very important that it's recognized that export controls can be very effective in preventing the traffic of counterfeits. I would now like to turn to the three main criticisms that were addressed to ACTA. There were many more, but I will mention three. I'm sure some of you will remind me of others, and I will be happy to address them in the questions and answers afterwards. The first, the impact on fundamental rights. Well, as it was repeatedly stated by Commissioner De Gucht, the Commission takes any issue that could have a negative impact on fundamental rights very seriously. The Commissioner committed before the European Parliament on several occasions to address any concrete allegation that ACTA breaches EU fundamental rights, including the right to privacy and data protection, for instance, to name but a few. So far, no one has produced a single shred of specific evidence that the ACTA treaty would violate civil liberties. The second point on access to medicine. If I may again come to the first point. This can be again strengthened or confirmed or reinforced by what I mentioned before, that ACTA does not introduce any new legal requirements for the EU. As I said, there will be no implementing law to be made in the wake of ACTA. ACTA itself is not directly applicable. You cannot go to a civil court and use an ACTA rule to enforce your rights. It needs to be implemented. The implementing legislation, which exists in the EU since 2003-2004, we believe it has been there for a very long time. It has been subject to the scrutiny of national parliaments, of courts. The issues of fundamental rights have not been raised. We believe this is a non-issue. On the second point, often raised as well, access to medicines. We must say first that the Commission fully understands, shares and supports efforts made regarding access to medicines in developing countries. Precisely because this is our policy for many years, we ensured carefully that ACTA would not have any negative impact on this policy and on this principle. We have done it namely by introducing in ACTA specific references to the Doha Declaration on Trips and Public Health, and by introducing in the text of ACTA an article that says that ACTA has to be interpreted and implemented in compliance with Articles 7 and 8 of TRIPS, and namely Article 8, which refers to the need to comply with safeguard of public health. More than that, patent infringements are not covered by border controls. Additionally, in the final version of ACTA, it leaves it optional for the signatories to apply the civil remedies chapter to patents. There is a May provision. In other words, this means de facto that ACTA would not oblige its signatories to apply any of its provisions on patents. These three safe levels of safeguard put together, plus the repeated political statement at the highest level of the Commission's concern with access to medicines, should allay the concerns of those who think that ACTA could negatively impact this policy. But again, I'm happy to debate this with you. The third area of criticism, the internet. There were many, many rumors regarding, for instance, the issue of three strikes or other sanctions that would restrict the access to internet, monitoring clauses, etc. We hope it is now definitely clear to all that there is no language in ACTA that would oblige its signatories to apply any such sanctions or instruments. But, by the way, this was never proposed or introduced in ACTA by any of the parties. There was considerable debate about this, enormous discussions, there still are, about an issue that was never proposed by any of the parties in ACTA. Nobody proposed a three strikes rule mechanism in ACTA. For the rest regarding internet, yes, as I mentioned before, ACTA introduces some common rules, which generally are still below what the rules that exist for the EU since 2000 and 2001. But the question here regarding rules on internet is relatively simple. Do we believe that internet should be a safe haven where everything is possible, where law does not apply, or do we consider that internet users have both rights, such as the freedom of expression, the right of privacy, etc., and obligations, which are the respect of the same law that applies to them in the physical world? I think our position on this is clear, and what we have put in ACTA is balanced fully in line with the acquis, shared by our partners, and among our partners are certainly the countries where internet is most flourishing, most developed, most effective and more free in the entire world. So, again, it's an issue that was much more discussed than the actual relevance it has in the end treaty. To conclude, and before taking your questions, quick words on the next steps. So the proposed agreement is now being submitted to the participants' respective authorities so that they undertake their domestic processes of entry into force. In the EU, this means that the Commission is finalizing a proposal for the Council to sign the agreement. Then the Council will have to vote on this proposal. If it approves it, it will become a decision, so the Council will sign the ACTA agreement. In parallel to this, formally, once the signature is made, the process is also transmitted to the European Parliament, which has to give its consent to the treaty. This is a new provision with the Lisbon Treaty. As far as I know, on international agreements, it has only been applied once in the free trade agreement between the European Union and Korea. So we are not exactly sure. I cannot give you very precise timing. We have only one precedent, and once the proposal for decision leaves the Commission is no longer the master of the timing, it is difficult to give you precise dates. There is also maybe a question before you may be curious about it, regarding the role of member states. As part of this formal process, the Commission, our legal service, Secretary General, the Commission services, we will establish definitively the legal basis for the treaty. That is something that can only be done once the content is fully defined. And depending on that, ACTA may or may not be what we call a treaty, a mixed agreement, a treaty of mixed competence between the European Union and member states. If this is the case, ACTA would then also need to be ratified in the member states. This is a process that typically in the past could take up to a couple of years or more. So that's it for the moment. Very happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Pedro. As I said in the beginning, one aim today is to have enough time for the debate, so I will now open the floor. Before your intervention, please state your name and your congregation representative.
Hello, my name is Cécile Desprin. I'm the Executive Director of the Society of Audiovisual Authors. I just have one question on the last point of Mr. Velasco Martins about the mixed agreement. The fact that we have a chapter on enforcement for me is an aspect of a mixed agreement of a member state's competence. But you said that it was not clear that it was a mixed agreement. Can you elaborate on this, please?
Thank you for this opening question. Any questions or comments? Yes, please.
Hello. Kasia Szmilewicz, head of Panoptical Foundation Poland. Thank you for your introduction. I would like to ask, well, I'm sure that you are aware of the existence of the opinion of European academics on ACTA, which is a recently released document, and the document which I have in front of me is like 8 pages long, stating why, in the opinion of this respected persons, ACTA is not in line with EU acquis and why it's not balanced in respect of fundamental rights. If you are aware of this document, have the Commission considered this argument, and do you have any response to this point? I wouldn't like to make them here because it's too long, but I'm sure you're aware of this.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is David Hammerstein. I represent the Consumers International and the Transatlantic Consumer Dialogue. I'm a bit perplexed about one issue. It's not about even the substance of the treaty. The main negotiating partner does not consider this a treaty, does not consider this a binding legal document. And this is what the U.S. trade representatives say all over Washington, to the point that it's obvious that there are important aspects of the ACTA agreement about injunctive relief damages that even just a few weeks ago, the Supreme Court of the United States said are totally unconstitutional. So if ACTA is not going to be treated by a treaty, it will not be approved by the Senate. So if it was treated like it was in the European Union, it's only going to be signed by the President of the United States as an executive order. It will not be, it's not, there's no question about whether it is in line or not with U.S. law, because if, even in the Obama's health care bill, there's an important aspect that limits damages and that means it's not. So there are a whole series of laws, so that question isn't even being discussed, because they say this is only a benchmark. It's only an example of benchmark for third countries. It says do what we preach and not what we say. Now, so this, I think, is a lack of equilibrium in this whole negotiation between the United States and the European Union, and I think it doesn't stop there. I think on fundamental rights, I have one concrete question. Vivian Redding has asked for an impact evaluation report on fundamental rights. Will the Commission go through with this request by Mrs. Redding? Will there be any other impact reports? I think the other issue is, aside from all the European academics who say that the criminal enforcement measures does go outside the EU acquis, I think you're kind of playing with words, Pedro, because on one side you said it does not force any change in EU acquis. Now, thinking about that, it makes me think, well, okay, you don't have to change any existing EU acquis, but it means that the member states will have to change the member state all their rules on criminal measures if they are not in line. I can think of many member states whose, for example, damages, remedies, and things are not in line with that. Then the other issue would be future legislation in the EU. How would that be in line with this? For example, I think of orphan works. There's a whole new business model that is being born out of access to millions and millions of works whose authors we don't know who they are. Now, we think of Google Books, we think of other things. Now, ACTA doesn't take into account orphan works or flexibility in copyright in its damages, remedies in it at all. So this could really put a tremendous straitjacket on the whole new use of copyright in the future. And I see no reflection at all, especially now that the European Union is presenting legislation on orphan works in the future. So I think right now, we have an initiative that globally, according to interpreters, favors one industry, the Hollywood entertainment industry, more than any other industry. When you think about globally the amount of money, less than other industries. And you think of the criminal measures and the other repressive measures. Just last week, the record industry, or a big part of it in France, said that the repressive measures of Adobe were not working. They were not even working psychologically. They were not working. It was a failure. So, yes, I don't want to go on any longer. I think I mentioned the issue of that. I think the last point I'd like to mention is the issue of commercial scale. I won't go on anymore. The issue of commercial scale contradicts the opinion of the European Parliament that defines commercial scale as willful criminal intent, and whereas commercial scale in ACTA just talks about direct or indirect economic gain. So I think there are a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I wouldn't like to hear the European Commission saying, well, we don't want a legal impact report, we don't want an opinion from the European Court of Justice on whether this goes outside the community acquis or not. Will the Commission ask for the European Court of Justice opinion? Will it ask for an impact report on fundamental rights? Will it ask for an impact report on the community acquis and on other issues? I think these are all important questions, especially considering that our main trading partner, the United States, does not take this ACTA treaty seriously at all. They don't even consider it a treaty.
Thank you. I think now we have a couple of questions and comments that we will probably give the floor back to Pedro and then take a second number of questions. Please.
Thank you. The first question on the mixed agreement nature. Well, as you probably know, the treatment of penal enforcement, issues of justice, criminal affairs, has changed in the way it's treated between the previous EU legal framework and the Treaty of Lisbon. So there are no longer the pillars. Many issues will now don't require any more the unanimity, etc. And this is why we need to look very carefully. These are the first treaties under the first international agreements under the new treaty. This is why we need to take that fully into consideration before we issue the definitive statement. So what I want to tell you by that is not that we have a preference or a suspicion of what is the solution. At this moment, I cannot tell you with legal certainty that the step of national ratification is required. We will know that, we will define that definitively very soon. We will be communicating our views to the deciding entities, to the Council and the European Parliament, but it is not settled in stone. That's only what I mean. Second question on the opinion by a number of European academics on ACTA. Yes, we are aware of it. We have had a first look. We saw it on internet. We didn't, as far as I know, receive it yet formally. I'm quite sure that it will be sent to Commissioner or to President Barroso. But for the moment, we have seen it on the internet, like most of you, some of you. Yes, indeed, it's a prestigious group of professors, and we respect their views. The first point, we have maybe a couple of initial thoughts about it, but precisely because it was done by a group of people who clearly know the area of intellectual property, we intend to look at it carefully, and when we have to reply, we will reply in detail. But as a few first remarks, well, it's good that in spite of some catchy titles here and there, when we look at the content, we are not talking anymore about fundamental rights and civil liberties and this and that. We are talking about different legal interpretations that are legitimate, that can be discussed, sometimes that can be explained. So this brings the debate into a much more rational and realistic area, and we are happy for that. A lot of the comments seem to go around the fact that ACTA does not repeat expressly some of the safeguards that are put in place either by the TRIPS agreement or by EU legislation or on IP or even by constitutional principles, etc. To that we must say ACTA is a treaty about enforcement, and it falls within a legal framework that exists. ACTA certainly does not repeal or contradict any of these safeguards that are put in place. It was just found that whenever there was no need to repeat what is obvious, if the TRIPS agreement stresses that parties must put in place a system for hearings or for contradictory, for instance, in the case of provisional measures. Knowing that ACTA is only open to members of the WTO, it seemed very obvious to us that you don't need to repeat that in ACTA. That system is put in place. There is nothing in ACTA that says that this system should be abolished. So the system will continue to be in place when ACTA is implemented. This is just to give you an example. On other occasions, there are criticism about provisions that are only optional, that have made provision or that stress that part according to the party's laws, etc. It seems for us strange that we are criticized precisely for something that was often requested, that ACTA be a flexible agreement that takes into account the legal systems, different legal systems of the parties. These clauses that are optional are examples of this flexibility. Furthermore, as I think any lawyer should know, and certainly these prestigious professors should know, in an international treaty, when you have a may instead of a shall, this means something. It means that this option was not acceptable, was not in line with the legislation of some of the countries, and therefore a possibility is open there for some to put it in place, for others not to do it. This seems quite obvious, nevertheless, it is a criticism that is made. I could go on, but since it's a long paper, I would certainly prefer, if you have one or two that you find particularly shocking, I would be happy to try to reply instead of going through the 8 pages in detail. Then, question of Mr. Hammerstein. I will not comment on statements, alleged statements by US colleagues. To say that ACTA is not an international agreement, we are in Belgium, reminds me of Cécile pas une pipe. It is an international agreement, call it what you want. In the US, the mechanism exists for it to be approved by executive order if it doesn't change national legislation. For us, that's what I have to comment about it. It is, of course, an international agreement.
No, but what they say is not binding. It's voluntary and not binding.
Since it doesn't derogate the Vienna Convention, I think, like all international agreements, it is binding where it needs to be binding. It is not binding where it say may, or where it say according, taking into account party systems. The treaty, the agreement itself, of course it is binding. Then there are several provisions, or I just gave examples, in the treaty that are not binding. An example, a provision on camcording, provisions on some provisions on the scope, on the etc., where we have these main provisions, etc. So that's what I have to say about that.
Just one, damages, remedies, and injunctions, no way this is going to be applied in the United States. And this is not a may, this is a must in the ACTA agreement. So the key economic elements of damages, injunctions, other remedies, will not be applied in the United States because it's a whole body of law that's not going to be changed. And they've told the US Senate that. So what does the European Commission think of that?
Nothing. We have considerable tasks linked with the approval of this treaty, with the promotion, the implementation in Europe. So certainly I don't intend to comment on U.S. Compatibility of law, first because I'm not an expert in that, and second because I'm not paid for that. I leave that to my colleagues in USTR. On the question of fundamental rights, first you said you put a concrete question. I expected for the first time a concrete question where ACTA would put in question fundamental rights, but no, you asked me about the impact assessment report. Well, on that, I can only repeat the line that Commissioner De Gucht expressed at the Parliament, that the Commission does not intend to make an impact assessment on fundamental rights. The treaty is there for people to see. It has been there, the first version, since April. The last version is there since December. There are many professors, many stakeholders looking at it. If they can come up with something, we are certainly willing, the Commission has expressed, it will take a lot of attention to it. It will be a very important issue for him. Until that happens, we are waiting, and we will not be conducting an impact assessment.
You have the data protection supervisor's report. That's concrete.
The data protection supervisor report, we reply to it. I hope the reply is public. If it's not, we can ensure. But I will check. We have replied to it. We don't have any concerns in that area. On the panel, yes. You said member states will have to change their laws which are not in line with ACTA. But we are not playing with words there. It was a different kind of negotiation. It was made under on behalf and under the full supervision and the full participation of ministries of justice, ministries, all the relevant ministries from member states. They are the ones who have to ensure the compatibility of what they accepted in ACTA with their law. As far as I am aware, there is only one country that announced that it would have to make an adaptation into its domestic law. This country was at the time presiding to the European Union and negotiating ACTA. So when this country negotiated a clause that would imply a change in its law, I can only assume, but please confirm with them, that this is done fully in line with their legislative process, with their national parliament, etc. That is the only example I know of a country that would need to adapt a certain provision to take into account the penal enforcement of ACTA. If you have more news on that, we can discuss, or even better, we can try to discuss it with the people concerned, which are the member states. The future legislation, you mentioned orphan works, etc. Lots of areas that are indeed where there are novelty and where that's another very important point of ACTA, maybe one that I didn't stress enough. ACTA is an enforcement treaty. ACTA is neutral on the substantive protection of IP rights. What you mentioned there is substantive protection of, in this case, of copyright or exceptions to the system. ACTA will enforce the rules that are in place. It doesn't choose them and it doesn't interfere with these rules. What ACTA says is, if there is an infringement, then you can go to a civil court and obtain this kind of provisional measure, or you can expect this kind of damage, or you can go to a customs office and ask to detain this good, or if it's on a commercial scale, you can go to the police or to a criminal court and ask for protection. This is what ACTA does. Furthermore, ACTA contains language, and maybe my colleague Vivaldi can go into more detail on that, contains language ensuring that exceptions in the area of copyright will be fully respected. So I frankly don't see, and again, if you have concrete examples, please, but I don't see in what to what extension ACTA can prevent future evolutions in the area of the protection of intellectual property rights in Europe. On the commercial scale, again, yes, this was a definition that was unanimously agreed by member states. You make reference of an opinion of the European Parliament issued some years ago on a legislation that was not adopted. But we have been talking to the Parliament. We have not... we don't see that there is any contradiction. The definition is in line with what member states have in their national legislations, in the way they implemented the TRIPS rule on criminal enforcement. So, again, I don't see that there is any issue, any thing that is radically new, except, and that is certainly something that we welcome, that for the first time it was possible for all the member states to agree on a definition. That is, for me, very positive, very valuable. This is it on if the Commission will ask for a Court of Justice opinion.
Thank you, Ben. I think there was a question to my last.
The EU can only harmonize criminal measures if approximation of criminal laws and regulations of its member states proves essential. And so we would like to see the proof that the measures are essential. There has not been any proof. I believe the Commission initialed ACTA. And did the initialing include the criminal measures? Because then the Commission would like the criminal measures to be binding upon the EU, and it cannot happen without proof that the measures are essential. So then the EU cannot ratify ACTA on this point.
Will you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Ante Wessels of the Vrijheidsrecht Foundation.
Thank you. James, please.
Yes. My name is Joyce Fahenna. I'm from ACP Civil Society Forum. Of course, the organizations of the Africa, Caribbean, and Pacific countries are concerned about the impact, although you guarantee that the impact will be limited. And they, as usual, they are not informed, or they are the last to be informed by their states and by the European Commission. But still, there is a procedure with regard to the ACP-EU cooperation, Article 12, and we want to ask if you will consult the ACP countries here in Brussels, what will be the impact of ACTA in the framework of this Article 12. Will you start consultations so that we will know really what will be the impact, or what do you estimate, or if you can listen also to the concerns of the ACP states in Brussels. Do you plan that, to have these consultations?
Thank you. I suggest we take a question.
Hi, my name is Philippe Trigger from La Quadrature du Net. And I wanted to say something about the way the digital chapter affects fundamental rights, and be a bit specific. We consider, as many other groups, that ACTA is going to pressure internet intermediaries such as hosting providers, search engines, as well as access providers, to become a private copyright police to enforce copyright on the internet. And the way ACTA, you know, pushes in that direction is through the position of injunctions and damages, and the intent of the, at least the Commission or the DG Trade to go in that direction is also shown by its recent communication regarding the revision of the ACTA directive, where it's clear that the whole idea is to at least on this on the issue of copyright enforcement in the digital environment, the Commission wants to circumvent the liability exemptions that are provided by the e-commerce directive. And so what all these measures or this trend could lead to is the establishment of filtering measures and other enforcement practices that really affect the internet ecosystem, the freedom of communication of internet users, due process, and that's why we have these concerns. One more thing, we think also, as many other groups again, that the whole ACTA argument is ill-founded. It was a 90,000 euro study commissioned by the infamous ADOPI agency in France, so the copyright enforcer in France, which showed that was released yesterday, and it shows that people who share cultural works online are actually the cultural industry's best customers. It was, I mean, say, black on white by the ADOPI in a study released yesterday. So the idea that we need to punish copyright infringers, file sharers online to protect cultural creation, artistic creation is a lie, and that's why we think the whole ACTA should be rejected by EU lawmakers.
Thank you very much for your questions.
Yes, on the question of penal sanctions, I really don't want to play with words, but the EU with ACTA is not harmonizing EU legislation. It is not. This treaty is negotiated, that part is negotiated by the, on behalf of the member states. It has to do the implementation of ACTA until there is an harmonization by EU law, and that, I tell you, it's not a secret. The Commission considers it's a positive step, the harmonization.
Will the criminal measures be binding upon the EU? That's the question. Will they be binding upon the EU?
Of course they are binding. They are binding since 1994 by the TRIPS agreement. What's the novelty there?
But the commercial scale definition goes much further than TRIPS. We know that. Come on.
The commercial scale. Yes. Okay. As I told you, this definition of commercial scale was agreed by the 27.
Will they be binding upon the EU?
I can only believe they are not. For the moment, they are not binding on the EU. They are they will be binding by the countries that are party to the agreement. And, of course, the 27 member states are party to the agreement.
So the EU, when it signs ACTA, will accept the criminal, exclude the criminal measures.
Microphone, please.
You will make a statement now that the EU will exclude the criminal measures when it signs ACTA. Is this what you're saying?
No, it's not at all what I'm saying. I am saying the chapter on penal enforcement was not negotiated by the EU. It's negotiated by the presidency on behalf with a mandate from the 27 member states, because there is no EU legislation in this area. So it is not binding at the level of the EU. It is binding nationally. That's, I think, as I told you, ACTA is implemented by domestic legislation. And the domestic legislation in the area of penal enforcement is 27 national laws. It is not a directive, it doesn't exist, it is not an EU regulation. I'm sorry if I'm not saying what you want, maybe reality doesn't align with what you want, but that is exactly the case. The EU is not making an harmonization through the back door of penal enforcement. 27 member states agreed on this set of provisions in the penal area, most likely because they feel it is in line with the domestic legislation. There, I'm sorry, I cannot give you a definitive answer. You would have to check with each of the countries.
No, I don't have to.
Okay.
I just want to know why you're binding upon the EU.
So then I move to the second question. The question on impact on ACP.
No, the initialing issue was not the question of whether you have initialed has not been answered. The question on initialing was a question whether the commissioner has to initial the agreement, and whether, I guess, also the initialing covered the criminal sanctions chapter. Yes. What's included in the question, please?
Sorry, I didn't hear the question. The
question was, has the commission initialed, and did it also initial the criminal sanctions chapter? Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, it was, the agreement was initialed. It was initialed by the commission and by the presidency. The entire agreement has been initialed by...
At what date?
Please don't interrupt constantly. It would be a better debate like that. It was, if I'm not mistaken, 24 or 25 November, it was initialed. On the question, moving to the question ACP, ACTA, as an international agreement, as it is the case, is binding for the parties who take part of it, who sign it and who ratify it. So the impact on the need for implementation by third countries is not there. I am not familiar with the mechanism you mentioned of Article 12. What I can tell you from the outset is that certainly we don't have any problem in informing ACP countries about ACTA and to have similar initiatives to this, to have a discussion with you. But a specific mechanism I am not aware of, I can check that with my colleagues, or if this mechanism exists, you can certainly trigger it. The questions on the digital chapter. Well, again, we don't see how the provisions that are put in ACTA, which, as I said in the introductory remarks, we consider that are far less demanding and less detailed than the already existing provisions in the European Union since 2000 and 2001, namely with the e-commerce directive and the information society directive. We fail to see how that has an impact on fundamental rights. Once more, repeating myself, since there is no need for implementing rules and since ACTA is not directly applicable, what is the impact, the negative impact that you expect on fundamental rights? ACTA contains on regarding the how to engage all the stakeholders, the right holders, consumers, internet service providers. ACTA contains some optional measures on proposals on cooperation. Again, where is the novelty there? The Commission has been doing this for years. There are currently ongoing at least two similar exercises, one for copyright, one for counterfeiting. Again, where is the big novelty and where is the radical change that ACTA provides in the EU? I give you that ACTA, this chapter is very useful for countries which don't have such kind of legislation, but not in terms of the EU internal system. It's not creating any new requirements in the EU. The system you mentioned, injunctions and damages, again, where is the novelty? All of this exists since the enforcement directive of 2004. Where is the... I'm sure you give me a couple of examples. That ACTA is ill-founded, well, we can certainly respect that some stakeholders will have fundamental divergences with either the concept of intellectual property or the role that intellectual property plays. We respect that. We don't share that. So, we take note that you consider that ACTA is a mistake from A to Z, but it will be, there is a possibility now to, for it, it will be discussed by 27 member states, it will be discussed by the parliament, and as we usually do in democracy, the majority will decide whether this is useful or whether this is an historical mistake.
Thank you, Pedro. I see three more questions. I think the gentleman over there was the first one, and then...
I would like to have some more detail on the initialing. So it was initialed by the Commission and the Presidency on the 24th or 25th of November. At what date did the Commission inform the Parliament about the of the initialing? Do you know? When did the Commission inform the Parliament that it initialed the agreement? And was there any prior information to that information that the Commission intended to initial the agreement at this date?
Thank you.
I'm asking because of the obligation that the Commission has to inform the Parliament at all stages of the procedure. And initialing is an extremely important stage, so it would, in my opinion, require thorough information both before, when, and what was initialed. And if you can also clarify exactly if the Commission initialed everything but the criminal chapter, and if the Presidency initialed only the criminal chapter. Thank you.
Thank you. Please. Thank you. I will refer back to the opinion following your question to be more detailed about the criticism and point to what can be the threat of fundamental rights. So two issues could be considered here. First, the scope of the agreement. These academics suggest that ACTA does not expressly exclude acts carried out by private users for personal and not-for-profit purposes, like education-related, research-related, for all use. If this is the case, then I believe we see serious threats to freedom of expression and freedom to take part in culture and to develop and create. And the second point would be, again, the digital chapter, where ACTA apparently says that disclosure of subscribers' data should be done not only for infringers, but also for non-infringing intermediaries, including individuals. If this is the case, then we could have a threat to the right to privacy and the improportional limitation of this right. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Walter Mols, also from Tijdschrift Netherlands. How do you reconcile the notion that this is nowhere outside IP when the damages part includes pre-established damages and additional damages for copyright infringement of phonograms? Since this is nowhere in any member state, the fact right now there are pre-established damages for process infringements. And I think this is also a clear and concrete example of potential infringement on freedom of expression. If an artist is wondering whether he is pushing the limits of fair use or not, and then has to consider the fact that there may be, or there will be established damage, pre-established damages under ACTA, as well as additional damages, this will clearly cause such an artist to steer as clear as possible from the limits of fair use, and therefore ACTA effectively will reduce fair use to a shrinking or almost nothing.
Yes. On the initialing of ACTA, I think that now I don't have the exact dates here, but either the it will be certainly the same week, the day before or 2 days before the initialing of ACTA. Commissioner De Gucht was in Strasbourg, and this issue of initialing was a very big part of his statement there. There were many questions.
He was in
Please let me finish.
So he didn't speak to the parliament. He spoke to a political group.
Please let me finish. So that I was not present there. I don't know exactly what was the content of the discussion, how this was discussed. I know that there is a huge debate around the initialing, which is an act that doesn't have a legal value. It's not legally binding for the European Union. It is a statement that it is very ordinarily the expression that negotiators have concluded a negotiation and that a text is settled. This then after that, it's the time for this agreement to be discussed and adopted or not by the respective processes. On what, who signed what pages, frankly, I don't know that. If you're interested, it's a question, please can make us...
I think you're obliged to answer that question because it falls back on the competence issue, whether this is binding on the European Union. If you cannot answer whether the Commission has initialed the whole agreement, I think the previous question has been to be re-asked and clarified.
The issue of the competence, as it is always the case in an agreement, is only settled when the agreement is concluded. This is quite obvious because it depends directly on the content of the agreement. That I told you already that this is being settled now. There is an inter-service internal consultation before the Commission proposes to the Council a decision. It is, as it is always the case, in this decision that the legal basis for the treaty will be established.
As is usually the case in this form, the format of these meetings, we'll take note of the question and then we'll come back to you and answer in the minutes and follow up by email if there is a question where cannot be given a precise question or answer, then we'll follow up on that. Now, make sure this is follow-up. On the question on...
My original question was, when did the Commission inform the Parliament that it intended to initiate the agreement the day after the vote on the resolution on the 24th of November, and to clarify which parts were initialed by which parties?
We take note of your questions and we'll come back.
Can you clarify whether the Commission, 2 days before the initialing, talked to the committee or to a political group?
We will come back to that. I was not there. I don't know. I've been to the previous ones. I was not in this one. I didn't count on being so interested on this particular subject, but it's a question. We take note and we'll come back to it. On the issues of the scope, I will give a couple of general remarks and pass to my colleague Benoit Lory from Internal Market, who can give you more detail on these points. But when you mentioned that ACTA would exclude use like education, own use, etc., please be aware that ACTA contains express a clause that expressly safeguards exceptions from, namely from the use of technical protection measures. So that is an example. And again, another very important item to have in mind is that ACTA deals with infringements of an intellectual property right. An exception is not infringement by nature. So the measures don't apply to legitimate uses that limit a copyright. This is my general question, but Benoit can give you more details and also answer to the question on damages.
Thank you, Bill. Good morning to everybody. Well, regarding the copyright exception, I cannot but just repeat what just Pedro said. ACTA is about enforcement, it's not about substantive law. There is a specific paragraph, a specific article in ACTA, which said that, Article 3.1, which said that this agreement shall be without prejudice to provisions in the party's law governing the availability, acquisition, scope, and maintenance of intellectual property rights. Therefore, all the exceptions to the copyrights, which are in the EU or in the EU acquis, based on the copyright in the Information Society Directive, AFISA, and all that, private use or use for university purposes, research purposes, all are preserved, all the legal exceptions. There is nothing to put in question that. There is no specific, specific provision on that. In the same line, to reply to the other question around the fair use, it's not an EU concept, it's an American concept. Within the EU acquis, we have a list of exceptions. We have 22 exceptions. Some are compulsory, some are not compulsory. It's up to each member state to implement according to their national law the exceptions. And we have just preserved this system. Regarding the damages, the question on the damages and the pre-established damages, I just would like to refer to the Article 9, Paragraph 3 of ACTA, which established this system of pre-established damages, additional damages, etc., and presumptions for determining the amount of damages. In these paragraph 3, there are 3 options that parties of ACTA are able to choose. We, according to the, for the EU impact, we will, the EU will not, has no obligation to implement any established damages, nor additional damages. It's just 3 options. It's either A or B or C. The EU current system is in line with the B, which is the presumption for determining the amount of damages sufficient to compensate the right holder. And the footnotes also provide for what we have in the EU acquis according to the enforcement directive article 13, the lump sum system. That's purely a repetition of what is in the Article 13. You have to understand that this Article 9 of damages in ACTA has been one of the most discussed articles among the parties. And we all try to preserve, or at least to have the best of our internal system, I mean internal meaning the EU system, the American system, the Australian system. We all wanted to have the best of it in ACTA. Therefore, one of the options was to have this alternative solution where Article 9 on damages provide for a framework, a list of solutions which are in a way optional, and each party choose the one it prefers. We have the paragraph 1 and 2, which are an alternative to paragraph 3, and within the paragraph 3, we have 3 different alternatives.
So basically, if I understand you correctly, you're stating that the EU only choose option B.
The EU will choose only option B because it corresponds to the current EU acquis. Regarding the question on the intermediaries, ACTA is in two articles, article on the injunction and article on provisional measures, provide for some measures that could be taken to the against intermediaries. This is also corresponding to the current EU situation, EU acquis. The enforcement directive already provides for this system, for the injunctions and for the provisional measures. ACTA just repeats what is currently in place in the EU, with all the safeguards regarding the fundamental rights, and in particular, if you read the article on the right of information in ACTA, there is a specific provision saying that it is without prejudice to all the privacy legal framework in place in each party's legal system. And there is nothing new regarding the acts against intermediaries than it is already in place in the EU system.
So there was a follow-up comment, please.
Yes, a very, very short comment. The idea is to respect existing exceptions and limitations to copyright. We're talking about increasing enforcement. We're talking about a new international benchmark. And at the same time, and this is a political question, the European Union, against the point of view of all of the ACP, African, Asian, Latin American countries, opposes radically an exception and limitation on copyright for blind, visually impaired people so that Braille, for example, Braille books for my country in Spain could go to Argentina or to Guatemala. This is against the opinion of the vast majority of countries in the world. So I don't understand, we have a binding agreement on enforcement, and at the same time, it seems quite unbalanced that against the request of all the African, Asian, the third world countries who are asking in WIPO for an exception, and all the blind organizations of Europe, for example, the European Blind Union, and Europe is adamantly against any legal exception or limitation. It says, well, it just has to be voluntary with no legal changes. And the voluntary solutions are totally ineffective and bureaucratic. I know this is not the topic of what we're doing in ACTA, but I think it creates a lack of credibility of an enforcement international treaty when you're slamming the door in the face of millions of visually impaired and dyslexic people in the world who need an exception to copyright internationally, not just inside the EU, with the EU taking what I would call a fundamentalist position on against copyright exceptions internationally. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Any other questions or follow-up, please?
Parties may exclude patents from the scope of ACTA, and the United States will do that. And it will give the United States freedom to reform its patent system at some point. For instance, when the competitive advantage shifts to China, they're massively taking out patents. So it seems a strategic mistake to accept more obligations than other parties.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Can you tell us something about the litigation against the Commission regarding transparency? Is that possible? Because an MEP member of the Parliament has sued the Commission, I see here today, in an answer from the Commission to the question about MEP Marcis Kafke. Can you have any comment in public on that?
Well, first on the political statement of Mr. Armestini, it's a statement, it's an issue that is unrelated. Thank you, Mr. Note. That's what we can...
I understand.
My,
my colleague, well, it's not an issue if there are not really more questions, or if we have a bit of time, my colleague in the end can say a couple of words on that, because we are here, but his reaction in the end of the meeting will be able to give you some information on your statement. On the issue of patents, well, it's not exactly as if the EU or the Commission has a choice, because our legislation includes patents, and the role of the Commission as guardian of the treaty and the acquis, and our mandate in ACTA was precisely to promote and to put forward, and at the same time to protect some of the red lines of our legislation. In the EU, enforcement legislation applies to infringements of patents, both at the customs, at the civil enforcement, and even can be said on internet infringements. If there can be internet infringements on patents, that also they are not excluded. So if that is our acquis, how could we propose otherwise in ACTA? We don't see that at all as giving more than others. It is our system. Until it is changed, and that is, let me just finish, not long. That's certainly a possibility for Commission, Parliament, Council to change the status quo, but until it is changed, patent infringements are addressed and will continue to be addressed by EU with or without ACTA.
You leave it out of the border measures, so it is possible. And what you do now is you fix it, you codify it in international agreements, so you cannot change it later on. When, for instance, the competitive advantage changes to China, so you limit your options while the other parties do not limit their options. It just seems a strategic mistake.
But history will tell which one of us is right. What I can tell you is that for the moment, our competitive concern, for instance with China, is precisely the one we are trying to address with ACTA, including infringements of patents. I don't know, in the long term, we will see who is right. Today, tomorrow, and the day after, I'm quite sure that the problem is much more infringements of patents, for instance, in China, than ignoring them. And that is what we have in our legislation. On your question, there is indeed a court case by a citizen. It was triggered as a citizen following a request of access to documents. We have provided some documents, we have rejected some others. We have given grounds for that. And this decision, this reply of the Commission has been taken to court, and there is a proceeding ongoing, so that's what I can tell you for the moment.
This is by an MEP, according to your answer, that the document, McCoy Agreement, maintaining confidentiality of documents that you talk about, that you agreed with the other parties when they started the negotiations, is subject to litigation, is currently an object for a court case lodged by a member of the European Parliament against the Commission. Can you comment on that particular MEP? Not the citizen has sued the Commission, but that the MEP has sued over this McCoy agreement.
What I'm trying to say is that the only court case I am aware was launched by a person. It is an MEP, but it was launched as a citizen in the framework of its access to... there was a request of access to documents pursuant to the regulation. And this was done specifically as a citizen. We, at the time, the Commission inquired on what quality this request was made, because we believe the treaty said there are different rules that apply to members of parliament. They have there are certain rules in the treaty regarding the kind of information they have access to.
it was not as a member of parliament, specifically it was mentioned as a citizen. I don't know if it's the same case, but anyway, I cannot comment on the details. There is litigation ongoing. What I can also tell you regarding this same issue of access to documents is that recently the Ombudsman has found on a similar request that a certain level of the request was directed to the Ombudsman regarding a decision by the Council, not by the Commission, but it was also on ACTA. And the Ombudsman considered that in international negotiations, as it is the case of ACTA, a certain level of discretion at some stages of the negotiation are justified and are considered as exceptions in the regulation on access to documents. This is all very detailed, but that's what I can tell you for the moment. It's ongoing. There is an exchange of documents at the court, and I don't know more in detail.
Research Institute. There was a criticism way back at the beginning days of ACTA that if it really is about counterfeiting, if the agreement is about counterfeiting, then why is the world's greatest counterfeiter not invited to participate? So now that you've brought China into the discussion again, would you like to comment on the future of ACTA and China? What will be the relationship in the future? Thank you.
Thank you. We still have time for to squeeze in some minor questions. Okay.
Yes, it's a very good question. Of course, we maintain that China is the biggest problem in terms of counterfeiting. That is very clear. We restated biannually we make a new assessment of what are our priority countries, and China comes well ahead as a category of its own and representing, sometimes it varies between more than 55% to 70% of the problem in the areas that we can quantify more easily, which are the areas of physical goods. So yeah, alone China is an issue more than the rest of the world put together. The issue with ACTA is not the only instrument of the EU. It is an initiative, it is an important initiative, but there is, and it is certainly the one that caught a lot of attention and was subject to a lot of debate, but there are many more instruments we have. We would have liked a lot that China would engage in ACTA and would be signing ACTA today. That would be very, very positive. At the same time, we are also aware that the biggest problems in China are not necessarily in their law. The standard of their law on enforcement is in many cases quite reasonable. The problem is that the implementation in the field, the scale, is a very big country, very big borders, a lot of production, a lot of exports. So we continue to engage them through our dialogues, through negotiations. You know that there was also some litigation at the WTO, not launched by the EU, but launched by the US. It is very much in our radar, and it continues to be a problem. And what I can say is that we would have liked a lot that it was part of ACTA, but ACTA was open to countries willing to join, and China was not willing to join.
Thank you. Any other questions or follow-up comments?
You are saying ACTA was open to join? That's the first time I hear this.
Okay.
Yes, well, before ACTA negotiations were started in mid-2008, there was a period where it was the concept was discussed. The concept was proposed for the first time 1.5 years before, around or 1 year before, 1.5 maybe, in the process of G8 discussions by Japan at the time. And then it was discussed for some time with a number of countries. There were a few countries that attended the preparatory meetings and then decided not to follow the process. And then it is most very likely that there are other countries who are willing now to join ACTA. Once the negotiations got to a certain momentum, that we stated that it was not advisable to have countries joining the bandwagon in the middle of the process. I don't know, towards 2009, that it would have been difficult for new countries to join the process. But certainly ACTA was, before, when it was discussed, it was open, and now it's open for countries who want to join. And we'll be very happy if the membership grows as soon as possible. I don't think there's any novelty there, either. We have said this many, many times before.
Thank you. If there are no further questions or comments, please.
Can I have a clarification of what is on the record for this meeting regarding when the Commission informed the Parliament it intended to initiate ACTA? As I understood it, and I asked them, is that correct, that the Commission thinks it says that it informed the Parliament 2 days before it initialed the agreement? If I can get a clarification.
Well, what should be on the record is that you put the question, and that I told you that 1 or 2 days before the agreement was initialed, I know that the commissioner was in Strasbourg, because it was the voting of the last resolution, where, by the way, the parliament supported the work that has been done in ACTA and welcomed the importance of this agreement and of what has been achieved. So something that is certainly very important for the European Commission to receive this this confirmation. It's not definitive, the Parliament will have the occasion to give its formal consent, but it was very important for us to see the support of the Parliament regarding ACTA. I know that during that week, issues like initialing were very present, because precisely they had been put on the agenda in proposals, alternative proposals to the resolution, or proposals that were rejected to the resolution, that gave a lot of emphasis to the initialing. So that's what we can agree on. That's the only thing I told. I don't have with me the information about when we informed the Parliament. I don't have it here. I don't know. I will have to go back and check. As I will have to go back and check who signed what pages, if really this is very important to you. I don't know if I see the relevance of that. But
it's relevant for the competence issue, of course. So that's a bit particular that you don't understand that.
An initial in a page defines who is competent for what. Well, as I told you, maybe we have quite different views on the importance of initialing, but it's something we can discuss at another occasion.
Thank you. One more comment or clarification, since we have time, I guess. I'll get to understand the point we keep making, I guess, here is whether in ACTA, the Commission exceeds certain powers, because ACTA goes beyond ACTA-COMITER, and your argument in response to this opinion I quoted was that it's not really the case, right, and that it, in fact it repeats the same. But here we have discussion on criminal sanctions, which I guess is clear that one thing is beyond ACTA-COMITER. So I would like to understand once again, what is your point on this? Is ACTA, how it stands now, and how it is being initialed within ethnic commentary or beyond? That's one thing. And another clarification, the fact that Commission signs it, is this binding on member states? If it is, then to me, clearly, Commission says for member states, so it should be within ACI. Or maybe I understand it wrongly. Thank you.
These are pertinent questions. The question of competence is, of course, a very important one, and this is why it needs to be well settled. And it has been an issue from day one, from the discussions of the negotiating guidelines of ACTA. So I'm not saying at all that it is an irrelevant question. I say precisely because it is important. I cannot make any adventurous statements today. It will be settled. The Commission's perspective of that will be defined very soon, and then it can be. It will be. It's open for discussion with the Parliament and with the Council. So then, if the maybe we can split it. We have a reality, is that the agreement has been negotiated in a mixed manner. Okay, I cannot take a definitive position on the legal grounds, but looking back at the reality, it was negotiated in a mixed manner. The Commission had the overall lead and responsibility of the negotiations and negotiated all the chapters, with one exception. The chapter on penal enforcement was negotiated by the rotating presidency on behalf of the member states, on the basis of a unanimous position of the member, of unanimous positions of the member states, because there were different rounds and different the positions evolved. That is what happened. This, if this indicates a mixed nature, then on the part where there is a community, a EU acquis, the Commission position is very much that this acquis is scrupulously respected. Nothing in ACTA goes against or modifies or goes further than our enforcement directive, e-commerce directive, information society directive, customs regulation. On the part of panel, there is no acquis, and that this will be a part where member states have freely committed to a common standard. And there, I cannot answer for each member state. In most cases, because their law complies with these standards, and in maybe the exception where this is not the case, these member states are ready to make the necessary adaptations. That is what I can tell you now. If we would have this discussion in a month, maybe, where it is settled, then we can be much more concrete. But I'm sorry, I don't want to be evasive, it's really an issue where we have no precedent, we have to move to be cautious and to be legally certain, precisely because it is so important.
So just for me to understand correctly, if you discover after having detailed look into this opinion that indeed there are discrepancies between ACTA and ACI in the sphere that he exists, then the Commission couldn't, I mean, that would mean that ACTA has to be abandoned or renegotiated, because legally it cannot be accepted by the Commission if there are discrepancies. Is that understanding correct?
No, it is not correct. Huh? This, it means, if that would happen, our initial analysis doesn't show any indication that that was the case, but we speak here theoretically. If that would happen, it could mean one thing, that the Commission has gone beyond its mandate. That is perfectly possible also in a negotiation, because then this is why there is a part who negotiates on the basis of a mandate or negotiating guidelines, but then there are institutions who adopt the final treaty. And if the constitutional conditions are there, if a majority, if sufficient majority is there to approve the agreement as it stands in the end, even if it goes beyond the acquis, then it can be approved. That is a step that belongs to Council and European Parliament. Council and European Parliament
can still adopt ACTA if it goes beyond the EU acquis. But here we are really talking theoretical. Please be precise in how you report these. It is pure theoretical exercise. This could apply to any treaty. It's just like that. The negotiator goes beyond the mandate. The risk he runs is that his work is rejected, but the work can still be adopted by the organs who have the constitutional power to do so.
Thank you. One short comment, please.
Yes, it's interesting that you say that the result can go beyond the acquis, which would result in changes of law. Now, it's the case that we already know that the criminal chapter negotiation will lead to changes of law in member states, which is comes back to the transparency issue, where the ombudsman case you mentioned, the ombudsman says that would ACTA change law, it has to be transparent. If you now say that ACTA, the result might go beyond the acquis to the extent that the parties responsible then with the competence can ratify it, then that would actually contradict or make void the conclusion of the Ombudsman, which is based on that no such thing will happen. So then it means that the Commission cannot use the Ombudsman case to argue for non-disclosure as it does.
Well, it only took 10 seconds to happen what I just asked not to happen, that you take a completely extraneous interpretation of my statement. That's certainly my mistake. As I told you, I was giving you a purely theoretical answer. I was not referring to ACTA. I was talking about what happens in any treaty where a situation like this can happen. Well, it's you decided already to build a construction on how to win or lose a court case or dismiss an opinion of the ombudsman. What can I do about it? But what I told you is what I told you. I was talking about a purely theoretical statement. I will be very clear. In the Commission's view, ACTA does not go beyond the European Union acquis.
And the Ombudsman says that if ACTA changes law, it must be transparent. And that is the case, that it will change member states' law already now. We have statements from ministers of justice saying that ACTA will change law in this mixed agreement that is being negotiated. So that makes the use of the Ombudsman case in defense of the way you have handled transparency void. And that's not theoretical, that's factual.
Thank you. Do we have a couple of minutes maybe for my colleague to intervene on what was asked earlier? Please.
Yeah, unfortunately, Mr. Kunashtag is not here anymore. But just on the political question he puts on us, I just would like to remind that there is Commissioner Barnier and also publicly available on the website of the Commission, but the Commission will, in the course of this year, issue a communication on the IPR strategy for the Europe, including different aspects, different policy on intellectual property policy, copyright policy, I mean, in line with the digital agenda. There will also be addressed some policy regarding the industrial property issues and obviously also the enforcement policy issue. Then, answering to the remark made by Mr. Hammerstein, obviously the Commission is aware that there is so many different policy or initiatives around IP that at one stage we need a more concrete common policy to include everything. The purpose of this communication, that to summarize all the initiatives which are taken so far in the Commission or the future initiative, and to provide the society, the civil society, with a clearer vision of what will be the future of the EU policy in IP matters. Within this communication also will be made a reference to the enforcement directive, and earlier this morning the representative that Aquila Jovinet make a reference to the enforcement directive. As you all know, according to the Article 18 of the enforcement directive, the Commission has issued a report on the implementation of this directive. And based on this report, a public consultation has been opened until end of March this year. And based on the result of this public consultation, the Commission will see if there is or not a need to review this directive or not. It will depend on the result of the consultation. Then you are all invited to provide with your remarks if you see any need to do it.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes,
please.
Would you agree that if there is no proof that the criminal measures are essential, that the criminal measures cannot be binding upon the EU, and the Commission just have to make an exclusion to make it clear to the other parties that it will not be binding upon the EU?
I cannot understand what means to be binding upon the EU. Can you explain me what that means?
Well, when you sign an agreement, it's binding upon you. That seems quite clear.
You who? You being the EU.
The Commission has negotiated ACTA. So when it signs, when it's ratified in the end, it will be binding upon the EU. So, but the criminal measures have to be proven essential before that can be done. So the EU cannot sign ACTA including the criminal measures.
Let me maybe give you a concrete example where these issues of the legal wrongs have been settled. The free trade agreement between Korea and the European Union.
Yes.
It contains very similar criminal provisions to the ones of ACTA. And it was negotiated in the same manner. So the Commission overall leading, the presidency on behalf of member states negotiating the penal enforcement chapter.
Yes.
Then it was when it was the moment to establish the nature. It was established that this agreement is an agreement of mixed nature, this so-called mixed agreement. So the agreement has been signed by the Council. That is always the case. ACTA will also be the case. It's not by the Commission, and it was also signed by the member states. And now it will need to be ratified by the EU, including the process of consent by the European Parliament, and will have to be ratified by the member states. In the end of this process, the provisions, the penal enforcement provisions, will apply to the 27 member states of the European Union. Does this answer to your question?
No.
For instance, when it's binding upon the EU, then the EU has to make law as well. It has to make criminal law because then it's binding upon the EU.
Allow me to clarify the question a bit here. Will it be clear which parts of these mixed agreements are signed or if it's binding to the European Union, and which parts are only negotiated by the Commission in its role as the negotiator on behalf of the 27 member states? It's a different quality as negotiator and also a different quality as a signatory to the agreement. How clear will the distinction be made?
We have no concrete precedent under the Lisbon Treaty for these issues. I can tell in the past there are
literally dozens, maybe hundreds of mixed agreements signed between the EU member states and third parties. As far as I know, it has never been an issue who signs what page. If that was the case, I'm not familiar with that.
Well, it now is, because of the different treaty.
The TRIPS agreement was signed split.
Okay, well, these are all the questions that we are still looking at and for which you want an answer today. I told you, this is being discussed. It is a very important question, both for the EU, because it's clear that the treaty now is different from what it was in Nice. We don't have a precedent to guide us. We have a treaty that is slightly ahead, which is the Korea treaty, but which has a different nature. It's not even entirely clear if the nature of mixed agreement was even because of the penal enforcement clauses or because of other provisions. What I can tell you is that hopefully in around 1 month, there will be a commission position on that. We can have a more constructive debate. This is an issue that was present in the past, that will continue to be present, and will be settled according to the Lisbon Treaty. What happens is that in this case, we are in unexplored grounds, so the solution will be reached.
There's even an European Court of Justice judgment on this, and it is prior to Lisbon that parts of that still apply.
It's also clear that the agreement shall remain open for signature by the European Union. That's in Article 39. So it's not only member states. The European Union is a signatory.
Of course it is.
So then the Commission will sign on behalf of the European Union, right?
No, it is the Council who signs on behalf of the European Union.
We're almost done, so I'd like to thank you for your questions and active participation here today, and my colleagues for your contribution. Thank you and have a good week. Thank you.